What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Francesco. And joining me tonight, the one and only Big Papa Chump, Dean Holzapfel. Oh. What's going on, man?
AEW.
let's just bag this episode and just talk about how Ben and Henry are back.
Okay.
Dean would do that literally for like 3 hours.
I would do that every single episode forever. On every podcast, on every platform.
We would never see George again. They're like week two.
Nope.
So tonight we are talking Unforgiven 2003. So I made a mistake. I promoted Unforgiven 2002 in the last couple episodes, but I got the years mixed up and I wanted to do 03. So I just changed it around and this is where we are. Next week will still be Unforgiven 2005. So tonight, Unforgiven 2003, this happened on September 21st, 2003 at the Giant Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So kind of rewind a little bit for you guys to talk about where Unforgiven was to where it is on this given year. Unforgiven 2000, which we covered last week, had a massive 605,000 buys, happened in Philadelphia. Unforgiven 2001 almost got half of those buys, 350,000 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 2002, all the way down to 296,000 buys in Los Angeles at the Staples Center. But they're up this year, 360,000 buys in Hershey. 10,560 people paid a live gate of 560,000. Dean, I'll ask you. I mean, we don't know, but you know, 2001 was one of the hottest years in wrestling. 2002 was, I mean, we've talked about maybe the best roster of all time. Why do you think the down numbers? I mean, going from 605 to 350, you'd be like, oh, that must be like a WCW like year over year, but no, this is WWF. Why do you think such a massive drop-off from 2000 to 2001?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I don't really have an answer for you because, I mean, it's not like the product was bad.
No.
I mean, it was still pretty good. So I make – could it just be a fluke? You know?
It could have been.
I don't know because – I mean, I remember, like, to me at this point, I mean, we all love the Attitude Era and stuff like that, but like, this is where the company was really starting to, like, you know, I mean, obviously 2000 was a great year. You said 2000, right?
Yeah. 2000 yeah. was a great
like,
year.
Like, it was a great year, and it was just kind of building on that. So it has to just be like, maybe, I don't know. I was watching the show and, like, it wasn't a bad show, but I was definitely just like, man, I don't give a shit about half these matches. So, like, maybe people saw the card and was just like, oh, I think I'm going to go, you know, bake a pie or something like that instead.
And what's crazy is I'm looking at Unforgiven 2001. So that was in September. That's 350,000 buys. And we covered SummerSlam 2000. You know, that pay-per-view had, you know, RVD in the ladder match against Jeff Hardy. They had Kurt Angle versus Steve Austin, The Rock, and Booker T. It's like, dang, man. Like, this was a loaded time for the WWF. Like, I just can't understand. And then you go to – and this is even more crazy. 2002, we know how great SummerSlam 2002 was. I mean, one of the best pay-per-views in the history of the company. Mm-hmm. And then the very next month, they have a pay-per-view that gets 296,000 buys. It's like, holy cow, like, what's going on here? But it's amazing how cyclical or, like, how month-to-month the wrestling business was back then. But here we are in 03, which is very much, as we'll be able to tell from this card, the WWF is in a transition period at this time. And so you're, you know, 2003 by September – there's no Rock, there's no Austin. And, you know, they're, you know, John Cena is not necessarily, he's not the biggest thing ever yet, but you know, you're going into a year now, the back end of 03, and two of the biggest stars in the history of the company are gone. So, and it's just wild to think about that. But here we go. There's a video package featuring the main feuds for the show. And the focus was mainly on Triple H versus Goldberg for the World Heavyweight title, with Hunter talking about how Goldberg won't be in the WWE after this event. The pyro went off by the stage, and it looked like a completely full house. It really did. JR and Jerry Lawler are at the commentary position. JR wearing an Oklahoma Sooners jersey, since he is teaming with Lawler, because, you know, that old football player, Jim Ross, has to wear that Sooners football jersey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to perform. So let's get right into it here. Handicap match to kick things off. World Tag Team Championship tables match. La Resistance and Rob Conway versus the Dudley Boys. The winners and new tag champs, the Dudley Boys. I gave this about a star and a half. Mm-hmm. It was decent.
Yeah,
the ending. Yeah, I mean, it was a decent match with an ending that made the crowd happy. It was just the rules of the match were like very weird, because it was a tables match where anything goes, yet they were tagging each other in during the first half of the match. It made no sense to me. The table bump by Rob Conway on the floor looked nasty, but I'm pretty sure I looked it up. He was okay after the match, but that was ugly. And the storyline, this was a non-title match until Stone Cold, who was one of the co-GMs, made it so when the other GM, Eric Bischoff, said it would be a handicap match. In other words, Dudleys were the faces that were at a disadvantage, and they left with the titles. I'll ask you, Dean, and this time, what were you a fan of GM Steve Austin?
I was kind of indifferent about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a big fan of Austin, but like that, there were times where I kind of was a little annoyed by him, and I remember at this time I was kind of like, you're not doing it for me, Steve. Like, I, you know, was stroking my Fu Manchu going, this don't work for me, brother. You know,
look, we always got to stroke the Fu Manchu.
Always.
At some point. A video package airs about the Test feud with Scott Steiner co-starring Stacy Keibler. Jeez. Tess was an asshole boyfriend to her, and Steiner had that rep of a ladies' man. So, you know, naturally, she likes him. Stacy Keibler made her entrance first. Everything should just have ended at that point. But, you know, we still have to see Tess and Steiner. Look, Scott Steiner versus Tess. Tess gets the pinfall. Tess forces a kiss on Stacy at the end, and she shoves him away. The stipulation for the match is that if Tess wins, then Steiner works for him, doing who knows what. I don't know where the hell they would have went with that. And if Steiner won, Stacy would be his manager again. In real life at this time, Tess was dating Stacy Keibler, so good for him.
Very good for him.
I mean, the breakup probably just killed him. Oh, I'm sorry.
Wow. That
was pretty bad. I thought it was a shitty match. I think every single match that Scott Steiner had in WWE at this time was just not good. Mm-hmm. You know, they had, you know, one or two decent near fall spots, but the rest was largely forgettable. And the story continued after this with Steiner becoming a heel ally of Test. I don't want to rip Scott Steiner too much, because I will say, I thought he was used very poorly by WWE when they brought him in at Survivor Series in 2002. He should have been a badass heel from the start instead of a babyface. You know, it's just – and then you stick him with the hottest heel in the industry in Triple H. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where do you expect this to go? Like, it's just not going to go anywhere.
Clearly an arm wrestling match and a pose off.
That's what we got for Scott Steiner. Let's see. So my favorite match of the night was just spectacular. There's a video package to set up Randy Orton versus Shawn Michaels. Orton was known as the Legend Killer at this point and was just 23 years old, and he was trying to make a mark for himself. He targeted Shawn Michaels, so that set up the match. In case anybody forgets, like a couple of weeks before this match is like the world-famous backstage promo where Shawn Michaels slapped the shit out of Randy Orton. Where, you know, Shawn basically said, if you want to use me as a stepping stone, you better step hard. If you guys can find that on YouTube, I'm sure you just type in HBK slaps Orton, and it is insanity, that slap. It's ridiculous. But here we go. Orton enters the Evolution theme song. He doesn't quite have his theme song yet. Michaels comes out to a huge ovation. But the winner by pinfall is Randy Orton. So here's, you know, Shawn Michaels, one of the greatest of all time, coming back and already doing jobs. The replay showed that Flair gave Orton brass knucks. The ref never saw it. And that's what Orton used to knock Michaels out for the win. I give this 4 stars. I thought it was a really good match. A lot of old school wrestling psychology with HBK. He sold his left arm injury the entire way through the match. Because the goal, and it was very obvious, and again, credit Shawn Michaels for selling it this way, the goal of this match was to put over the younger heel in Orton. Michaels, I mean, of course, has had so many matches that were better than this. And normally, if he gets about 20 minutes during a pay-per-view match, it's going to hit that 4-star level match. You know, this match is not like, it's not going to make my top 20 Shawn Michaels ones, but there are
still times, good match though.
It's and there's still times where I like to go back to this pay-per-view to watch this match. I just really like, and I thought Flair played a great catalyst in this one. Mm-hmm. Just vintage, dirtiest player in the game type stuff. So Flair was spectacular. I loved at this time, you could tell Flair was getting his confidence back being with Evolution. The shit that he would do on the outside were just amazing. What he was able to do to sell for both guys in the ring, he'd sell anything the refs would do. God, he would even like, you know, fake punch fans that would talk shit behind him. He was just so money in Evolution, and I really enjoyed him then. But overall, just a great match. If you guys want to check out this pay-per-view, this is probably the one match to watch. Backstage.
It ain't the main event.
It ain't the main event, brother. We'll get to that. Backstage, Jericho talked a lot of resistance in the training room. He said Steve Austin is the reason they lost the belts because he made it a title match at the last second. Jericho said nobody will stand up. Said somebody will stand up to Austin sooner rather than later. You know, this led, you know, that led to the story where Austin put his GM job on the line against Eric Bischoff at a match at the upcoming Survivor Series, which was spectacular. But, you know, that would be the last that we would see of Austin for about 4 months up until WrestleMania 20. The next match here is the Let Me Up match where if anyone had to take a piss or go get something to grab to eat. Trish Stratus and Lita versus Molly Holly and Gail Kim. Molly Holly was the women's champion at the time. She was a heel with Gail Kim, who was competing in her very first pay-per-view match. Trish and Lita were obviously the mega baby faces here, with Lita coming back after missing an entire year after neck surgery. So that's just wild. Winners by pinfall, Trish and Lita. I actually thought this was decent. I mean, it was about 2.5 stars. It was good for the time that it was given. You know, in this era, you know, 7 minutes was what the women typically got in a pay-per-view. It followed the usual tag team formula with the heels, you know, predictably going over Trish and building to the hot tag to Lita. No pun intended there. Since Lita was just coming back from injury, it obviously made sense to put her over in the biggest of ways. So it was the second that this match was booked, we knew who was going over. It was pretty good match here, I thought, moving forward. A video package aired for the Last Man Standing match between Shane McMahon and Kane. A focus on Kane just going batshit crazy after he lost his mask, beating people up, lighting Jim Ross on fire, hitting Linda McMahon on a with a tombstone on the stage. That's what brought Shane McMahon into the storyline. It led to a lot of violent matches violent attacks between these two, including, but not forgetting the time that Kane electrocuted Shane's balls at ringside.
Say the greatest moment in wrestling history.
I'm thinking to myself, wow, like this is where we are now in 2003. We're hooking up a car battery to somebody's ball sack and electrocuting them. Just insanity back then. They were put into a Last Man Standing match here by Eric Bischoff. Kane made his entrance first. Shane McMahon showed up with a chair to the, you know, showed up with a chair to the back as the match began. The winner here was Kane. I gave this match 3.5 stars. I thought It was a really good effort by both guys. They were real physical. Kane was obviously the powerhouse. Shane McMahon had like that no fear attitude. Obviously, it was a gimmick stage at the end. From what we saw, it was similar to Mick Foley's Hell in a Cell bump at No Way Out 2000 in terms of the landing. There was obviously a crash pad there. It was very impressive, though, that Shane was willing to do a spot like that. Like, I don't think that dive is remembered as well as some of his other high spots, but it looked nasty. The match was booked really well. Cool spots. You know, post-match replays aired the bump, and it was probably 15 to 20 feet at least. Shane was taken out on a stretcher, and the crowd cheered for him in the effort. I think their feud ended and continued ended at an ambulance match at Survivor Series 03. But just wild. I mean, this was a time where Shane wasn't wrestling that much, but when he came around, so basically what he's been doing the last decade, when he comes back, expect something ridiculous to happen. Where do you put, I'm not talking about like top 10, top 30, top 50, but do you think Shane McMahon ever got the credit he deserves for just how important he was in the Attitude Era and some of the biggest matches? I mean, people remember him so many times for so many things. Do you think he's somebody that we'll see like maybe get inducted into the Hall of Fame one day as a performer?
I think you have to, because he was a integral piece to the corporation, you know, and just kind of, I mean, both the two of the best eras in the history of the company, the Attitude Era, and I would say parts of the Ruthless Aggression Era. I definitely, like, he was a big cog in that wheel. So, you have to. Yeah, you have to. He has to go in the Hall of Fame.
I agree. All right. So, let's see. Austin was in his office with a beer. Chris Jericho showed up to tell Austin he created a monster in Kane. Jericho mentioned La Resistance were screwed out of the tag titles because of Austin. Austin got in his face and told Jericho to take his best shot. Jericho said he's not going to make it that easy for him. Told Austin he's going to make things difficult for him, like he's making things difficult for everybody else. And then Jericho ended by telling Austin to watch his Intercontinental title match and reminded him that there's more than one way to make him crack. I thought it was a really good segment. The Jericho-Austin rivalry was really good during this period, as I mentioned earlier. You know, it led to that massive elimination match, the Survivor Series. So it was pretty good storytelling here to start. It just kept on going and went all the way into November. So good on them, too. I thought Jericho was like – I wouldn't say he was at his near peak in 03, but, you know, I would say 02, 03, 04 – Jericho was pretty damn good. I mean, he was amazing, whether it was on the mic or in the ring. and then when he came back in 08, he was just bar none top two or three in the world. He was just so good. Mm-hmm. I still rank him as the top five best heels ever.
He's up there for me.
Absolutely. He should. Yeah, I agree. Next up, Intercontinental title match. This was a pretty good one. Christian versus Jericho versus Rob Van Dam. The winner by pinfall was Christian. I gave this 2.5 stars. It was good. I expected it to be better. To me, I thought, shockingly, the crowd seemed very disinterested early, basically because the crowd just saw a man fall from about 20 feet in the air. So I guess it's understandable. But the last 5 minutes of this match were really strong. A lot of near pinfalls that brought the crowd back. It was a crafty finish. I don't know if it's the right call, if it's right to call it cheap, because over the years, WWE made triple threat matches as no DQ matches. So I'm not sure if it's to say that Christian was really cheated or that Christian really cheated, but I mean, whatever. I mean, the finishes in back in 03, a lot of times were just so damn confusing. If you guys go through the year of pay-per-views there, but whatever, as long as the quality was good, I guess people didn't care. Triple H, the World Heavyweight Champion, was interviewed by Mark Lloyd backstage. Triple H said that Goldberg is like a fairy tale that's going to have a bad ending. Hunter talked about how he's going to end Goldberg's storybook career and told Goldberg that it's time to play the game. Vintage Hunter. Let's see. And then we get to this just bullshit. JR and Jerry Lawler versus Coach and Al Snow. I don't know. I mean, nobody it's really hard for me to even like.
I skipped over this, by the way, when I went to rewatch this.
Yeah, this was just painfully bad to watch. I mean, one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. I mean, who thought this was a good idea? Like, I hated how WWE was always trying to humiliate Jim Ross. And then having the match without announcers didn't help either. Mm-hmm. You know, the win meant that Snow and Coach were the announcers on Raw, but that didn't last long at all. It was just so bad, post-match, Mark Lloyd interviewed Jericho. Jericho said he didn't win the IC title, but he screwed Austin by costing his buddy JR his job. The video package aired to set up Triple H defending the world title versus Goldberg. It focused on Triple H retaining the title during the Elimination Chamber match at SummerSlam 1 month earlier, which was also not a good match at all. Triple H wrestled that whole entire match, I believe, with a torn groin, which is why he wore those, you know, those biker shorts. Yeah.
I still don't understand why he didn't wear the biker shorts and then, like, crack out the old, you know, long tights for one match. You know what I mean? Like, just to wear it over top of it.
You got
to
show those quads, brother.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, he wrestled that match with a torn groin, and that the finish of that match was so terrible. I remember I mean obviously it's devastating, but still from an eye candy standpoint, Goldberg goes for the spear, then he just gets hit in the back with a sledgehammer. 1, 2, 3. I'm like, all right, whatever. They're just burying Goldberg any chance that they could. I agree. That 2003, man. Everything that could go wrong with Goldberg just completely went to shit. So, you know, good, because I'm not a Goldberg guy, but
he whatever. Only worked in WCW.
Yeah, you're right.
He did not work in WWE at all. The only time I would say he did was when he came back and he put down Brock Lesnar. That was like, what, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. Yep. That was the only time in the company he worked.
I agree. Yeah, I've never been a Goldberg guy. Triple H entered first, noting that he was alone because if the Evolution allies were there, he could be counted out or disqualified, which could cost him the title per stipulations of the match. Hunter, again, is wearing these long biker shorts, these biker tights to help protect his groin since he was dealing with a pretty bad injury here. A big ovation for Goldberg, who looked like as jacked as ever. But, you know, here we are, World Heavyweight title match, Triple H versus Goldberg. If Goldberg loses, he must retire. Winner by pinfall and new World Heavyweight champion, Bill Goldberg. Womp, womp, womp. 2 stars I gave this, mainly it's because of Hunter. I mean, most times when Hunter is going against a shit opponent, it starts at 2 stars because of Hunter. I give him all the credit in the world for working this hard with a torn groin against an injury machine in Goldberg. You could tell even with Hunter being hurt, how limited Goldberg was. Like, the longer a match goes, which is beyond like 4 minutes, Goldberg is such a liability to the other guy. Like, it's just bad. Like, they played up the big spots well. The crowd popped for them. There wasn't a whole lot in between those big spots to make the match stand out. It was just a very boring 15 minutes with a few cool spots. It just the finish was flat. Goldberg no selling the sledgehammer looked really bad. Because normally guys sell that in a big way. But, you know, at least Hunter, you know, because he buries everybody, does not that kick
gold,
out
that of the golden shovel.
Yeah, that invisible fucking shovel. Hunter did not kick out of the jackhammer. So, you know, again, you would think, you know, you want to kick out of my, you know, talking over the match in the back. Sure, you can kick out of my sledgehammer. I'm going to kick out of your fucking jackhammer. That didn't happen because Hunter is a professional. it's just... Again, I go back to this all the time. Triple H, even then, he was just amazing at putting guys, like, even his matches against Scott Steiner were not good, but Hunter, Triple H makes them all passable. He was just so good at making the other guy passable. And Goldberg is a perfect example of that. The fact that this even went 15 minutes, there should be a plaque. Whatever arena this was in, Hershey, there should be like a ride named after Triple H because of like the fact that he went 15 minutes with Goldberg and has still lived to tell about it. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. Goldberg celebrates with the World Heavyweight title as JR did his best. Oh yeah, that's right, guys. JR and the King are back. Did his best to try and sell this as a huge moment. The crowd reaction was decent, but it was nothing special. I think people were actually surprised that Triple H had actually lost. Because this win ended the 10 plus month reign of Triple H. He had the title for 11 of the previous 12 months. And I remember back then, not me, but I remember, even friends of mine who were wrestling fans, a lot of fans were like just sick of the title run of Triple H. So when this happened, people
kind of was a little bit too, if I remember correctly.
It was like that. What do they call it? The Triple H Reign of Terror, I think they called 2003, which is crazy because we have a guy now who's had the title for like 17 years. So, you know, Hunter would get the title back soon because we all knew it was happening because Goldberg's reign didn't last long at all. But I mean, Goldberg was only around for another 7 months, 6 months because he was gone by WrestleMania 20 in April. As was Brock. So it's just crazy. My final thoughts on this pay-per-view. This is a below average show to me that was lacking in terms of memorable matches. There were some pretty cool moments. Goldberg winning the title was a big deal at the time, but the match was trash. Orton going over on Michaels served a great purpose, although it wasn't a clean win, but I enjoyed the heck out of it. Yeah, and then Shane falling from the sky, doing another one of his crazy bumps, was very impressive. Everything else to me, like you said, was just very forgettable. On the final note, whoever thought the announcers tag match was a good idea should honestly issue all of us an apology because that was that was just awful. Out of a 10, I give this pay-per-view a 4.
I'm probably right about there as well.
A 4.
Well,
this was this wraps up Unforgiven 2003, and just to let everybody know, next week is Unforgiven 2005. So let me kind of just give everybody a quick little update on what happened in 05. So the matches we had: Ric Flair defeated Carlito to win the Intercontinental title. Matt Hardy defeated Edge with Lita in a steel cage match. Shawn Michaels defeated Chris Masters. And in the main event, Kurt Angle and John Cena went at it for the WWE Championship. So we will some pretty good things to talk in about there. A massive crowd came out for that one. It was like almost 20,000 people, a sold-out crowd. I forget how many pay-per-view buys this had. I'll have to check it out. I think it was like 240,000, so it wasn't great. But 05 was a downtime again for wrestling. But in 05 – I agree, 05 is great. But like at that point, it didn't matter what was down or up because there was no competition. There was no other company. I mean, there was TNA.
That could be it. You know, that could have been it probably.
Yeah, you're right. And we'll talk about that. Hopefully
George will be back from the dead to join us.
That would be great. Before we head out of here, Dean, you are the resident AEW viewer on the show.
Yes. I pop it in every once in a while.
So what's going on? Is All In going to be a disappointment? Is there going to be some shocking things? I know George thinks MJF is going to return. I just heard we just heard a rumor that Malakai Black has been released.
Really? I didn't hear that.
I sent that in the Instagram. Yeah.
I haven't been on Instagram.
Oh, okay. So. He asked for his release and he was granted it, apparently. apparently five others have asked for their release, but those names were not given. So
we know where Black's going.
Yeah, right where Zelina is.
Yeah, that's why I want to be. I listen, you know, as much of a clown show as AEW is, I'd say 75% of the time, they typically put on great pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
So I would expect the pay-per-view to be good. I mean, I'm not spending $50 to watch it.
Right.
You know, but I expect it to be an enjoyable event.
Mm-hmm.
I really only care about the potential of a Punk Moxley rematch because was that you just text us?
No, it's not
Punk signed the open contract, which we all knew was gonna happen. So I'm very curious to know what is really happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
With this, because as somebody who I would say out of the three of us is a more of a CM Punk fan,
mm-hmm.
It kind of irritates me that he's consistently still crying about like WWE and all that stuff. Like it starts to kind of just be like, all right, dude, like come, can we move on? Like move the fuck on, dude. Like you've been out of that company for 9 years, 8 years, however long it's been. Like it's time to like put your big boy pants on and focus on the here and now. You know, you're arguably the biggest name in AEW, so like act like it. So
I agree.
I think but I don't know. I don't really know what's going behind because if there's one thing I will give credit to AEW for, they're very good at doing the work shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this is going to be like Punk doing the deed in his hometown and potentially retiring. And that's just a theory I have. I think you know if he's gonna leave the company, which we're hearing he might.
Yeah,
I don't think he's just going to disappear. I think he's going to pull some bullshit retirement angle and that's it. But also, this could be a whole work. He could beat Moxley at the pay-per-view. And mm-hmm. we're all just like, oh, shit, we're wrong.
we don't know.
I mean, overall, though, I don't particularly care because I just am so disenfranchised with AEW right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a shit show every week. I mean,
yeah.
Said the, I mean, tonight Moxie cut a really good promo, and I'm not a Moxie fan. I've openly say that to everybody. Everybody knows me knows I'm not a fan. He did cut a really good promo to open a show, and then they rolled right into Danielson against Jake Hager, and I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah,
like this is the guy Danielson's wrestling against. I don't care.
It's insane that in 2022 nobody cares about anything Bryan Danielson does. It really is sad.
Yeah, if he's not wrestling Kenny Omega, I don't give a shit.
I agree. All right, that'll wrap it up on Hot Tag this week. I hope you guys enjoy the show. Thank you so much for downloading last week's episode. And then coming up next week is Unforgiven 2005. And then next week, I will once again go over the upcoming show list that we have coming up. Looking forward to doing that. At the Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram, I'm Chris C. Francisco. That's Dean Hall's Apple. We'll catch you guys down the road. Have a good rest of your week and weekend. And don't watch All In. Let's not do that.
Screw it. That don't work for me, brother.
Oh man. All right, guys. See you later. Bye-bye.